Welcome to the Life in the Stocks podcast, ladies and gentlemen. My name's Matt Stocks. I'm the host, and the show features unedited, in-depth, candid conversations with a wide range of musicians, actors, comedians, and creatives. If you're not already, be sure to subscribe to Life in the Stocks on your favorite podcast platform. We're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and indeed all major podcast platforms. Be sure to give me a follow on Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok as well, at Matt Stocks DJ. That way you can keep up to date with all of my live Q&A dates, my DJ performances, and of course, who's coming up on the show as well. But without further ado, let's crack on with the show, shall we? Here we go.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
It's the most wonderful time of the year. With the kids jingle belling and everyone telling you be of good cheer. It's the most wonderful time of the year. It's the happiest season of all.
Howdy, Mark. Good to see you, man.
Good to see you.
You're doing all right?
Great. Yourself?
Yeah, very well. Sorry, I'm a little bit late. I was trying to sort the lighting situation out in my dad's lounge. I think it's good enough. I think we can work with what we've got.
I'm in my son's bedroom because my studio is being occupied at the moment.
Being occupied by your son? Have you done a switcheroo?
No. My son's in college now, so this is my safe, quiet sanctuary in the house now, his room.
Love it. I was trying to think in the lead up to today, the last time we spoke, and I can't for the life of me recall, but we've obviously chatted loads over the years when I was at Kerrang Radio, Scuzz TV, Metal Hammer. But it's been a good long while. It's probably pre-COVID for sure. And obviously, you know, a lot's happened since then that we don't need to get into. But I reckon for the purposes of today, my friend, because I'm just so fascinated and intrigued and impressed by your, first of all, Sinatra covers record, which you put out, and then the upcoming Christmas one. I'm just in awe of the boldness of it, first of all, because I know, being entrenched in this music, wonderful musical community, that punk and rock and metal fans can be a little bit fearful of the outside of the box, to put it politely, right? And sometimes you can make these creative choices that, from the outside looking in, might seem strange to some people, and there's often a little bit of resistance from certain corners of the musical community when people who are known for one thing, in your case, riffery and hard-hitting heavy rock and roll, go and do something I think is amazing as what you've done with the Sinatra record and this Christmas one. And I want to just get into it as much of it as we can in the time that we have. So first of all, dude, Sinatra to you, is that a love affair that traces right back to your childhood? Because for me, my earliest musical memories really is like Miles Davis and Charlie Parker and stuff like that. And then Bing Crosby, Perry Cuomo, Frank Sinatra, like all of that amazing classic crooner stuff was the soundtrack to my childhood. Was that the same for you, or did you discover and fall in love with it later on?
Yeah, I mean, I remember playing hide and seek at my grandparents' house with my cousins, and Frank Sinatra's on, you know, records are playing in the holidays, and it's just such a, you know, it's such a nice, happy place for me. Every time I hear it, it just makes me feel good. And, you know, since then, since I've really done the deep dive on Sinatra, I've found some, you know, moodier stuff that I love just as much or more. You know, it's not all about the Christmas songs and the songs that everybody knows. He's got such a deep catalog. You can find almost anything you want when it comes to Sinatra. You can find dark, you can find happy, you can find sappy, you can find anything you want.
Well, if anybody's interested in kind of Tom Waits style stuff, for me, Frank Sinatra is probably the first to delve into that kind of maudlin after hours, you know, like the In the Wee Small Hours record, which obviously you've covered the title track of that. That album, I also think, was maybe even the first album in the history of music. That's right, is it?
It was. You know, the only other artists that were doing full length albums were like big orchestras. You know, it was never pop artists. So he was the first normal commercial artist to come out with a record, and they considered it a concept record. And I think that's why he wanted to put it all on one record, because he considered it at the first concept record. But yeah, that his contribution to music is crazy. It's so, you know, who can say, yeah, my record was the first record. You know, he was also the first artist that had people lining up for blocks and blocks and wetting their pants because they didn't want to leave their seats when he was doing a show. You know, it was, you had Bing Crosby before him, but Bing didn't do that. You know, Frank Sinatra was the first time you would see people lose their minds and just, you know, at the Paramount Theater, it was first come, first serve, and you'd have all the Bobby Soxers just pissing themselves because they didn't want to leave the seats to go to the bathroom because they'd lose their seat. So the theater would smell like perfume and piss.
I should clarify at this point as well, we have a phrase in the UK, when you say I piss myself, it means you have a fit of laughter. But what we're talking about here is literally soiling yourself, isn't it?
That's right. they loved him so much, they would prefer to piss themselves and then lose their seat to the show.
How much do you know, and obviously I'm not expecting you to be a Sinatra historian, but when you go down the rabbit hole, as you must have done in the lead up to making that record and really kind of absorbing yourself in his universe, how much did you read up about his life and the story of his career? Because there's so much drama and intrigue around him from all the mob stuff and the corruption, and like, you know, he's a fascinating, enigmatic figure, isn't he? Beyond just the music, like his whole lifestyle is shrouded in mythology.
His life is one of the most interesting lives I've read about. I've read all the books. You know, I've read not only books about him, but I've read books by his managers and his daughter and his, you know, books about the guys who wrote his songs. And, you know, I've tried to tackle as much as I can. I wanted to know what I was getting into. And like you said, he had such an interesting life that you don't realize the things he accomplished. You know, I think he was in 56 movies as well. He recorded almost 1600 songs. You know, he was the reason presidents got elected. Sometimes he would go and he'd bring all the celebrities in and he'd raise all these funds and he would gather all the attention. He was a big Democrat to begin with, but then John F. Kennedy kind of screwed him in the end. I think he built his house out in Palm Springs to, when he knew that he was going to have the president elect come and stay with him. He built this helicopter pad. He built this great, awesome estate so he could bring the president in. And then last minute, the president's brother said that Frank was not a good influence. So he wanted him to go stay at Bing Crosby's house instead. So he became a Republican after that.
And that's because of the mob ties, was it?
No, the mob ties. Well, yeah, you know what? His reputation could have been tied to the mob ties, you know, and I think that got overblown. I think Sinatra just thought that dangerous thing was kind of cool and exciting to be around. I don't think he ever got into the darker side of the mob. I think he pretty much was at a party. He went down to Cuba with the guys and wanted to meet the guys and got caught in a picture with them, and that kind of everything kind of went crazy from there. And he had to go to court. He had to testify. He had to do all kinds of things, and it was I think it was way overblown.
Hey, let me ask you this. In a strange turn of events, is this true or is this internet rumor? So you're talking about Sinatra influencing presidents. Is there a film in the works about Reagan in which your Creed bandmate, Scott Stapp, is playing Frank Sinatra? Because that seems too crazy to me to be true.
Yeah, you know, when I was practicing singing like Sinatra for a couple of years, and then I got the diagnosis with my daughter had Down syndrome, and I wanted to do this record for charity. We went through all the steps of getting a hold of the Sinatra estate, getting approvals from the Sinatra estate to do this record, which was the biggest achievement of them all, because the Sinatra estate, as you can gather, get calls every day to get stuff licensed and to perform it. They don't say yes to hardly anybody. So when we got the approval, we were really excited about it. Then I get the news that Scott's playing Frank Sinatra in a movie, because it came across on the web. I was blown away. I thought it was more than winning a lottery ticket to have Scott playing Sinatra, me singing it, and us both not knowing each other was doing it.
That's the thing. There was no communication between the two.
None whatsoever. So I just, I don't know what's going on with that movie now. I haven't heard any updates. I'll ask Scott next time. I think I'm going to see Scott on Wednesday. I'll have to bring that up. But yeah, it's pretty crazy.
I got excited and cut you up there. So what were you going to say, the analogy of having those two things, you know, in succinct come together? Mind blowing, right?
It was incredible. I mean, the odds of that happening were just mind blowing. I couldn't believe it. You know, and at one part of me was I was like, you know what? It's kind of a shame that they're happening at the same time, because I wanted this Sinatra record to be so far out of left field that nobody would have ever seen it coming. But now if Scott's doing this movie and I'm doing this, it looks like we planned this together.
And you're here today to confirm that it was definitely not planned or discussed. I love that. Just pure 100%.
100%. And when Charles Pignon from the estate called my manager, he's like, what's going on here? What's going on with this movie thing? You're trying to back, you know, why didn't you tell me about this? My manager's like, I had nothing to do with this.
Love it.
So yeah, it's weird.
Well, there's nothing stranger than fiction. There's nothing stranger than fact, I was going to say.
Absolutely.
The
Absolutely.
Truth is stranger than fiction sometimes. You mentioned a couple of things there that I'd love to dig into a little more. The first being entering into that orbit. You know, there's very few artists. There's, you know, there's Dolly Parton and Elvis and the Beatles. And there's these songwriters and these cultural figures that are so ubiquitous. And with that comes so many levels and layers of business and copyright and all of these things. So I obviously, you know, wouldn't expect you to recall the whole process now, but give me a little bit of an insight into, from the idea to the pitch and navigating those meetings and moments, and just because it's fascinating to me when you step, because, you know, you're an experienced, successful artist that's travailed the heights. But this is a whole other level behind the curtain, isn't it?
This was definitely a huge, you know, I credit my manager for tackling this, because it was a mountain of things of hurdles to get past to get this done. So I fell in love with, you know, I've always loved Sinatra, like I said, but I've really had one of those nights where I couldn't fall asleep. I'm on YouTube and I'm digging up all this old Sinatra history. And I came across the song "Is You" that he did in 1943, and it blew me away. And I'm like, you know what? I want to sing like this. I want to practice just for fun, just as a guitar player. As you're a young guitar player, you hear a guitar player, you're like, I got to play that. And you'd sit down for hours and do it. I did the same thing with Sinatra. And I was lucky enough to have the same vocal range as Frank Sinatra. So I could practice it. And it's not like I was trying to sing Chris Cornell. I couldn't do that, you know? So I was practicing. It was at the beginnings of COVID. I had all the time in the world to take my son to soccer practice every day for like 3 hours a day, and the parents couldn't get out of the car. So I'd sit in the car and I would analyze how he sang. And once I felt pretty good about it, I called my manager. I said, you know what? I want to put together a local band. I want to find some local musicians. I want to find a couple trombone players, saxophone players, put them all together and go start playing some unannounced shows at restaurants or something just for fun. He's like, why in the hell would you do that? My guitar teacher growing up was Dan McIntyre, who toured with Frank Sinatra. I'm like, you're kidding me. Yeah. And he's like, well, why don't we get the real guys, the guys that toured with Frank Sinatra. So my manager set up a meeting with Mike Smith and Dan McIntyre. And at one point, Mike Smith was the band leader for Frank Sinatra's live touring band. So he tells me, he's like, these are no nonsense guys, man. You got to know your stuff. They'll shoot you down in a half second. So he sits down, has lunch with them, tells them the story. And the guys are like, can your boy sing? And my manager had never heard me sing any Sinatra stuff. So I got on my phone and I just did the, they call. Yeah, I sang Luck Be a Lady over the phone for him. It's like, oh, great. So we set up a, so then we had the guys were like, you know what? We'll do it, but you got to make sure that the family will let you do it. And that's the toughest thing. That's near impossible. So my manager just stuck with it, kept on calling, kept on pleading our case, said, not only do we have the guys who toured with Frank, we have, we're doing this for charity. Little by little, Charles Pignon, who runs their business, started agreeing and with the project and gave us a shot. He just said, you can do this, but I don't want somebody who's just going to mimic Frank Sinatra and do exactly what he does. I want you to do your own arrangements. So we did half the record true to Frank's arrangements and half the record our own arrangements. He's like, I need at least three or four songs that are your, if we're going to support this, we need songs that we can put on Seriously Sinatra Radio and we can promote that don't sound like the original versions. So we did an arrangement of My Way. That's with a, you know, nylon string guitar, very, very stripped down, more of a ballad version of My Way. We did I Fall in Love Too Easily, which was, had no rhythm section. We added drums to it. We, you know, things like that. We just did our own version of half the record. So they finally agreed to it. We turned it in. They loved it. One of the coolest things that's ever happened was the Frank Sinatra Barn Lounge opened up in Nashville and Charles Pignon called and invited me to sing at the grand opening of this. Tina Sinatra was there. So I remember Charles was like, hey, Tina's on her way. She'd love to meet you. And I was standing out in front and Tina Sinatra walked straight up to me. And she's like the nicest woman in the world. She said she loved the record. And I sang My Way to her as she held my wife's hand in this restaurant. And that was like, you know, singing My Way to Tina Sinatra as she held my wife's hand was I'll never forget it.
That's bringing a tear to my eye, mate. So I can only imagine how emotional and incredible that would have been for you. And as you say, as you sort of alluded to a couple of times, the kind of the driving force behind the project, am I right in thinking, was to raise awareness and money for Down syndrome charities, both in the US and the UK. Two of my dear friends from college, Charlotte and David, gave birth to a daughter, I think 2 years ago now, with Down syndrome, called Lila. Lila the Smiler, they call her.
Yeah.
And what's been lovely and really inspiring and heartwarming about the journey which they've shared of, you know, this is their first child as well. So they're not only going into this whole new territory of Down syndrome, but also just being parents for the first time. So it's, you know, the whole gambit. And the stuff that they've sort of given me and other people on Instagram and stuff insight into is how much having a child with that condition really changes your worldview and your interactions with everybody on a base level for the better in so many positive, joyful, wonderful ways. I wonder if you could share a little bit about what being a father to somebody with Down syndrome has maybe taught you about yourself, about you know, the world, about life, because it does seem to be like a gift, a real gift.
Absolutely.
What's your daughter's name, first of all?
Stella. Her name's Stella. Yeah. So, you know, we've got a saying in the Down syndrome community called we're the lucky few. You know, it's you'll never meet a parent that says, you know, that feels down about having a child with Down syndrome. It's always stories about how these folks become the anchors of their family and everybody loves them so much. And they're just such sweet individuals. And that's been true for us. I like to tell new parents, you know, just wait, you're in for a fun ride. This is, you know, it's different, but there's just as much love there. And there's just as much excitement and the journey is just as much fun. And, we've realized that the Down syndrome community is so supportive, and there's so many organizations across the country that there's an endless amount of support. You know, there are health obstacles, and we've had to have open heart surgery for our daughter, but it went off on without a hitch, and she's perfectly healthy now. And other than having a cold at the moment that she can't beat, but she's sweetest thing in the world. Since she's been born, she has done so many things for all of our friends. She has raised so much money for charity. You know, we've raised well over $1 million last year for charity in her name. Tomorrow, we're announcing the Smile with Stella Tremonti Down Syndrome Clinic, which is the first in the Southeast of America. That's a lifespan clinic. So that's probably my life's my favorite achievement in life is opening up this medical clinic with Advent Health. Advent Health is one of the biggest healthcare providers in the United States. And this is the first clinic of its kind, like I said, in the Southeast of the United States. And we just, tomorrow's our big press day for the launch of it.
Well, I've got you on a very exciting evening then.
Yeah.
The night before all that gets shared. I love it, man. I love it a bit. So, and obviously that the project, the Sinatra record helped raise loads of money as well. So not only are you kind of successfully tapping into your hero's catalog, winning the approval of the estate, you know, you've got this really personal driving force behind the whole thing. And it must have opened up so many musical connections. Obviously metal is so, you know, it's a real community, and that's one of the things that everybody who's in it loves about it. But this is like a whole other, you know, arm to your musical existence, really. And in terms of the shows that you've played and the people you must have met doing these live shows, I know you were here in the UK. Was it the Christmas before last, or was it last Christmas you were over here?
It was last Christmas.
So what sort of fans are you meeting at these shows? Are there fellow parents of children with Down syndrome, and are there like just straight up hardcore crooner fans that have never heard Creed or Alter Bridge? And is there like heavy metal dudes rolling up in suits? Like, give me a, you know, a snapshot of the cross spectrum of everybody who's been coming out to the Tremonti Sings Sinatra show.
So the very first show we did, it was all pretty much Alter Bridge fans at first, because Alter Bridge was active at the time. So all the Alter Bridge fans came out, and this is the first time I saw all these folks I'd see all the time, and they're dressed in their suits and their dresses. And everybody said, you know, they loved getting dressed up for the evening. And I only met one fan who was like, "This is the last time you'll see me in a suit." But
first and last. Yeah,
that's right. So we did that show, and it was all rock fans. But then as time went on, now we're doing theaters where they have mailing lists, and they'll send mailers out to all the people who buy tickets to the opera or the ballet or the play or this and that, anybody who goes to the theater. So they all hear Sinatra, and you have all these older folks coming to the shows. And I'll have friends come back and tell me like, "Yeah, I just went to the bathroom and I overheard these people talking about how it reminds them of their childhood and how great, and they've never heard of you before. And they just came out because it's Sinatra's music and they enjoyed themselves." So it's good to see it's branching out to different audiences. And, you know, the next big show we have is December 16th, which will be our biggest show yet here in Orlando. We'll have the choir out there. We'll have 17 piece brass and a huge string section. And I'm trying to convince Miles to come out and join me for a song, and trying to get Scott Phillips to get up there and play a song on the drums. And I'm going to film it all for a DVD, hopefully.
What an exciting time, man. You know, you're one of the most prolific and busy and consistently creative people in any musical lane, you know, not just the alternative one. And like, you know, is it 7 albums Alter Bridge have done, 7 studio albums with them? You've done 5 solo albums, obviously, you know, all the Creed catalog. As if that's not enough.
Me and Miles are fighting for that. Me and Miles, yeah. I think I might have Miles by 1 record now. I think I've done 18 albums. I think he's done 17. He's in the studio right now working on his 18th record, I think.
Well, yeah. Having spent, you know, a bit of time with you two over the years, not only are you two the nicest people in music, but what I love is the level of quality. You know, sometimes when people step out of their day jobs, let's call it that, the side projects don't often match in terms of, you know, just quality. And I don't want to say heart and soul, because I think anybody who's creative puts their heart and soul into everything they do. But sometimes it feels like these sort of side projects have been phoned in a little bit. But you guys are meticulous with your attention to detail, with the care, the execution. And like, what seems to be great is that there's no ego or awkwardness from the outside looking in. You know, sometimes business can kind of dictate certain boundaries and perimeters. You guys seem to have this flow dialed in where, like, when Alter Bridge is taking time off, maybe Creed's kicking up again, or Miles is going out with Slash, or you're doing solo stuff, or Miles is doing solo stuff. It must be a bit of a minefield to work all that out. But as I said, from the outside looking in, it does seem like, you know, you guys are just very superfluous and easygoing with all of that stuff. Is that a correct assumption?
Yeah. You know, I think it, you know, when you're in your first band, I think people get more possessive or more protective of their bandmates. They don't want them to do anything outside of the band because you worry about losing them. You worry about losing your band. But with Alter Bridge, we came together after being parts of other bands. So we were more open-minded. So when Miles got the call to go play with the guys from Led Zeppelin, you know, we weren't scared. We were excited. You know, it's like, wow, our singer's getting that call. That's amazing. It can only, what's the saying? High waters raise all ships, right? So when Slash had reached out to have Miles sing with him, at first it was just, I think Slash did a record where he had multiple singers and Miles was just one of them.
Yeah.
We were excited. You know, we thought Slash is such a big, credible, great player that it's just going to raise the awareness of Alter Bridge. So Miles, go do it. Now when Miles goes out and tours with Slash, I can go tour with Tremonti. And when he's not with Slash, he can tour with Miles with his own solo band. And, there's always something we can do. And as long as we keep being productive and we don't take too much time off in between any of these projects, we can keep them all alive, you know. And, you know, Creed is kicking back up again. You know, we're going back out with Creed in April.
So we'll get there, my friend, because yeah. In fact, let's jump into that real quick now. So I've done several cruises with Sixth Man. I'm about to go and do another one in a couple of weeks, in fact. So I've done Flogging Molly. There was an emo one that I did, and I actually got invited by Gene and Paul to go on the last Kiss cruise and do a DJ set and host some live Q&As with them. It's like one of the greatest honors of my life. So I'm well familiar with the whole setup with the cruises. And this is obviously, you know, your first shows in however many years. So how do you link up with the cruise company? How is that idea pitched as opposed to, say, a more traditional, we'll go out and do some arena shows or whatever? Because they are going to be the first Creed shows, right? Is on those two back-to-back cruises that you're doing.
They are. You know, I remember talking to my manager after we had done Shiprocked cruise, and our agent, he puts on the Parahoy cruise. I forget what it's called. It's the Paramore cruise, and he says it's a very successful, great cruise. So he was familiar with Six Man through that. So I had come up with the idea. I'm like, why don't we put together a cruise, like a 90s based kind of thing, where we get Creed and all the bands that were big at the time. And so I call my manager every day and sick him on 10 different projects. So he's always, I don't know how he keeps up with it, but.
Is Tim your manager as well? Or is he just Alter Bridge? Yeah.
No, Tim. Yeah.
Great guy.
Yeah. Tim manages Miles' solo band, my solo band, Alter Bridge. The three members that are in Alter Bridge and in Creed's kind of thing. And then Seven Dust, you know, managed the Seven Dust as well. But, you know, we thought the cruise would be just a nice, easy way to get back. You know, it's been over 10 years since Creed has done a show. So it'd be a good way to a soft launch, you know, just to get in there, do a cruise. Sometimes when you dive into a whole 3-month tour, it can be a little hectic. So why not just test the waters with that?
Literally.
So yeah, exactly. And then, you know, we thought it would be well attended, but we didn't know, you know, the Six Man folks. I think they said in their 21 years of business, that was the quickest they've ever sold out a cruise. And they said, why don't we do another one? So we put out another one 5 days later. So we're doing two cruises, and then, you know, we'll be announcing some other stuff. You know, hopefully soon.
Exciting times. And, you know, they've done about 10 cruises with Kiss. And so, you know, that therefore Creed is a higher selling ticket outlet than Kiss.
Don't put that out there. It's what they say behind closed doors. They're trying to make me feel good.
Go tell Gene that. He'll be livid.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
So let me ask you this. As a guitarist and a singer, and you've kind of collaborated extensively over the years with two really unique, really talented, larger-than-life singers. One's obviously more of a larger than life frontman than the other. One's just like, you know, the most amazing vocalist of all time ever. When does your real confidence in your own voice begin to develop? Because sometimes, I guess, when you're standing next to guys like that, you know, you could perhaps risk being a little bit intimidated. Or is it more the case because you're known more for like being a shredder and a guitarist that actually singing for you is more just like easygoing, dare I say, and kind of just fun?
Yeah, I don't worry at all about singing. Like if you said, go sing in front of the president, I'll be all right, let's do this. Let's have fun. I'm like on the Creed cruise, I'm going to host karaoke night.
Amazing. Yeah. Will you be doing any karaoke. Sinatra on the boat? I mean, that's a given, right?
Oh, I'm singing Sinatra on the boat. Yeah, for sure. I'll be singing all kinds of different, not just Sinatra, but.
Give me some of your go-to karaoke songs, Mark. After a couple of beers on a Friday night, what are we hitting out?
Night Shift by the Commodores.
Ooh,
that's a big one. I like Dock of the Bay.
Classic. Whistle solo and all.
Absolutely. I like the Climax Blues Band, I Love You.
I don't know that one.
No, that's if you heard it, you'd probably know it.
Benny King, Stand By Me is my go-to one. I love that one.
That's a good one. Absolutely.
Karaoke is so much fun, isn't it?
The Postman.
Yeah. Marvelous. Postman,
that one. But I like to sing songs that aren't rock songs. The only rock songs I'll sing is I'll sing Rebel Yell sometimes. That's one of my favorite songs of all time. But I like when you do karaoke, like step out of the box, do something different.
Of course, because otherwise it's like, yeah, we know he can do that, but we didn't know he could do that.
Yeah, exactly.
How's Scott doing, and how are you and him these days? You in a good place?
Yeah, he seems to be doing well. I mean, we got together. I've seen him twice in the past month. We did a photo shoot for the cruise launch, and then I just got together with him just this week. We're going to be flying. I'm going to see him on Wednesday. It's top secret, but we're going out for there's a sporting team that has been really believing in Creed and using our music to pump them up to win all these games. So we're going to go surprise the team on Wednesday. So I'll see him again then.
Really is all go at the moment in your world, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh yeah. It's crazy right now. We've got two teams. We've got the Texas Rangers and the Minnesota Vikings that are both talking in the press how they're using Creed's music to get them excited about winning some games. So it couldn't be better timing for, you know, Creed coming back after all these years.
Yeah, Creed are a really interesting entity to me because obviously coming from the UK, and I'm sure you'll be aware of this because you come over here all the time, you know the UK culture. Creed, apart from a couple of songs in like horror films in the tail end of the 90s, I guess The Faculty was one, maybe one of the Scream films, Scream 3, maybe. But like other than those, we weren't really that switched on to Creed. At least I wasn't. And I was always into, you know, all of that, the music of that time. And they were one of those, I think Breaking Benjamin perhaps was another one. There were certain bands that were obviously and still are massive, massive in America, but didn't really come over to this side of the pond. So did you find when you're starting Alter Bridge, did you find that it was actually easier to kind of make inroads in the UK and Europe than perhaps in the States? Because there wasn't that, you know, oh, these guys are just the guys from Creed. This is just Creed, but with a different singer kind of, you know, lazy comparisons because we didn't really have that looming shadow of Creed over here. Did you find it was easier to introduce Alter Bridge on this side of the pond?
100%. You know, I think when we started Alter Bridge in the States, we were just Creed part two to everybody. We were any kind of comment people could do to shoot us down at the beginning, because at the time Creed was the one of the biggest bands in the States. And you had this love hate thing. So you had a lot of people trying to drag, you know, it's just human nature, isn't it? Where you have somebody doing well and you know, you want the underdog to take them down. We were the top dog at the time, and people wanted to see us taken down. Some people did. So when we started Alter Bridge back up in the States, it took us 3 records to shake the Creed thing and have people, you know, give it, you know, have positive reactions to it. So, but right out of the gate, the UK was great. I think every time we play London, we say, you know, we owe our careers to as Alter Bridge to London and to the UK in general, because it took off right away. At the time, I feel like the music was, people loved tenor vocals there. They loved guitar solos there. They loved that hard rock thing, melodic hard rock. And it just fit well. And thank God we did that, because we've done, I don't know how many tours now in Europe, but that's kind of our home base for Alter Bridge.
Well, I think as well, there was a really nice sort of collective group of similar in some senses bands that came up around the same time, bands that I used to love playing on Kerrang Radio when I worked on there, bands like obviously yourselves, Blackstone Cherry, Hailstorm, this great wave. And I know you've toured loads with those guys. And for me, I kind of like lump you all together, not necessarily sonically, but just in terms of bands who landed around the same time and have soared, you know, from like academy bands to like O2 arena bands in 10 years. It's amazing.
Yeah. It's been, you know, everybody says this about European fans, that if you keep coming, you keep on putting out records that don't get worse one after the other.
I was going to say, as long as they don't suck.
Yeah, you know.
Then we'll come for you.
Yeah, you keep on putting out stuff that your fans appreciate and you keep on touring, they're going to keep coming back. It's not, America can be fickle. You know, it could be huge one day and gone the next. You know, if it wasn't for the American rock scene, we wouldn't have a career to begin with. So it's there's the best of both worlds there that we got.
Is it a heavy burden to bear being in a band as successful as Creed was? I know it's like, oh, the successful rock star saying, woe is me. But like, I'll sort of phrase it and set it up for you, so it doesn't seem like you're get the world's smallest violin out. But like, when you are, as you say, massive, you're like a diamond selling band. You know, not many rock bands can say they've done that. Millions of albums sold. Was it hard on you emotionally taking all of that slack, that criticism, that negativity from certain areas? Or do you think because you weren't the front man, perhaps Scott bore the brunt of that a little bit more and it was more people coming after him than the band itself? And were you able to kind of deflect some of it, or did it, you know, depress the hell out of you at times as well? Because people can be mean.
It was brutal. It was brutal. It was, I had to get to the point where I would tell people, don't tell me anything negative. You know, it's, even if you're selling 10 million records, there's going to be those 10,000 comments that drive you nuts, you know? So it's, I'm lucky to have been able to do the Alter Bridge thing, where in Creed, we sold tons of records, but we also had tons of haters. With Alter Bridge, we didn't sell as many records, but we had all the love. You know, there wasn't any haters. It was all, except for at first when we got together, like I said, in the States, and people just considered us Creed part two. We got the critical approval with Alter Bridge, and I think being able to do both the bands, I got to see both sides of the fence. You know, what do you enjoy more, being this critically accepted band that has to, you know, struggle to stay on tour because it's, you know, more of a niche thing, or the big band that doesn't get the respect from certain circles? And it's, you know, it's good to be able to see both sides of that fence. And now when you meet bands, you can understand where everybody's coming from.
Yeah, absolutely. And like, how much at this stage in the game, I mean, you kind of experienced all there is to experience. So, I mean, obviously you're working all the time, but assumedly the moment you weren't loving it, you'd go on to something else, right? So it's safe to say, even X amount of years in, it's still like, you know, the thing you love to do the most.
Absolutely. You know, and I try to dive into a lot of different things. And it's funny, when I started doing the jazz, you know, the Sinatra thing, I'm like, is it weird that this is my favorite thing to do right now? Because I spent my whole life doing hard rock. And and that's just, things happen in waves. You know, when you do something new and exciting to you, it kind of takes over. And sometimes it's good to reset like that. You know, when I go back to Alter Bridge now and get to put my rock hat back on, it'll be fresh and exciting again, you know, because I got to step away and go into a different world for a while.
Who, fellow band-wise, I know Paul Stanley's obviously a big fan of the Crooners. He put out a kind of a soul-style record. I had him on the show around that time. He did a great job with that one as well. Who within the kind of hard rock, heavy metal community, musician and artist-wise, has reached out and been like, yo, that Sinatra album's amazing? And even, could I get involved in a bit of that?
You know, it's been...
Is there any of them?
It's been crazy. You know, it's... I could have written 100 rock records and never gotten the attention of some of these folks. But I know right out of the gate, Steve Stevens reached out and said that he wanted to take a chance for charity. I started this thing called Take a Chance for Charity. And it's challenging other people to do something like this, do something that their fans wouldn't expect, do it to raise money. So Steve reached out. I had, all kinds of folks. You know, Paul Stanley is one of the folks that commented, really, you know, reached out and gave me a great quote for the release of the record. I remember I was on tour opening up for Judas Priest, and I walk into catering and Rob Halford sees me. He's like, come here. That record is beautiful. He said, your Sinatra record is beautiful. And Slash heard the record and he gave me a great quote on it. He was very supportive of it. He said he loved it. The producer of Frank Sinatra's duets record, Hank, you know, who's his biggest selling record of his career, you know, gave us a lot of great quotes for the record. One of the coolest things that's happened also is I was having a bad day. I was on tour. I was over in Europe. I forget what was going on. I might have been getting sick or something on tour, and I was just kind of not feeling well. And I get this text from my buddy Tom Robb. Tom works security for Metallica and Robert Plant, all these huge bands. Great guy. But anyways, he was taking Robert Plant to Bonnaroo, and he said, while I was driving in my car, I'm like, hey, Robert, you want to listen to something? He played him my Sinatra record, and he said Robert Plant loved it. And I'm like, are you kidding me? Robert Plant, of all people, would have never listened to anything I ever did, you know, outside of this. So it's great that something like this can be heard by somebody like that. You know, it's for a guy like me, that's untouchable, unbelievable.
It's the ultimate seal of approval, isn't it?
Absolutely.
And what Absolutely. About you boys? What about Miles and Scott? What did they have to say as fellow bandmates, but also fellow singers? Was there any insight from either of them into their, you know, deepest thoughts?
I haven't gotten to talk about it with Scott Stapp yet, but Miles has always been real supportive. You know, he loved it right out of the gate. I think the first song I played him was Nancy with the Laughing Face, and he said something like, oh, it's magical or something like that. You know, something really nice. You know, he's always been very supportive, and that's why I want to get him out when we do this Christmas show. I want him to get out there and sing with these guys.
Hell yeah. Well, the thing with you two is, you know, because not everybody maybe knows this, but like, as well as being an amazing guitarist, you're obviously an amazing singer, but Miles is an amazing guitarist as well, isn't he?
He's
amazing.
He's really amazing. You know, there's a lot of times where I'm like, wow, he's way better than I am. He's a great improviser. He's a great, he's a theory based, he's a jazz guy, you know? So I think he would shock a lot of people if they just sat down and played with him. He's got some of the best vibrato I've ever heard. And a lot of people agree with me on that. A lot of people didn't know. Like when he was a kid, there was this guitar competition in the Pacific Northwest with like 180 contestants, and he won first place. And he just got tired of having to deal with singers, so he started singing himself. And when I reached out to him to sing for Alter Bridge, I had no idea he played guitar so well. I thought he was more of like a strummy, because when he listened to the Mayfield 4 stuff, I knew he played guitar in the Mayfield 4, but that was more just, there's not tons of guitar solos and stuff in there. So when he was over at my house and we were working on the first record, I remember walking upstairs and I heard him some jazz coming out of the guest room, and I knocked on the door to say goodnight, and it was him playing. I'm like, are you kidding me right now? That was you playing this? You never told me you were that good. And that's when the Blackbird record started. I'm like, you're playing guitar on this record. This will be our secret weapon to have somebody as good as you as another guitar player in this band. I remember seeing Queensryche as a kid, and they had two lead guitar players. I was like, wow, what a great thing to have, you know, not just one at the time. And so I thought, why not get Miles on there? And Miles now, you know, he takes leads on records, and I take vocals on records, you know, so we get to enjoy each other's generosity when it comes to being able to do each other's roles.
Yeah, it's the double threat with you two. And obviously, you know, I would presume the hardcore fans know this, but like, something that's worth mentioning, and again, I'll mention it so you don't have to, is that a lot of the melodies and the songs, right, in Creed were just as much you as they were Scott. So you've always been that melody guy, as well as, you know, the straight up, let's shred and riff and crunch them with the guitar. And that's evident in even your solo stuff, which is that bit heavier, obviously, than Alter Bridge and Creed. There's still at the core of it songs and melodies and hooks. And that's obviously where you come from first and foremost as a songwriter.
Absolutely. Now, I would, you know, I would get frustrated when I was younger, when people would just say, yeah, you're just the guitar, you know, just don't melody
guitar.
Yeah, I'm the guitar, Mark. you're just the guitar guy. I spend most of my time writing songs. You know, the lead guitar thing really takes up 20% of my productivity when I'm working. You know, it's always the songs, writing songs. The guitar solo stuff comes last minute when you have to record a record, then you're like, all right, I got 9 solo breaks I got to work on. Now it's time to put this, learn everything you can before the record's recorded, kind of thing. So, but yeah, when I get the chills from writing something, it's not guitar stuff. It's vocal stuff and melodies.
So it's beginning to look a lot like Christmas as we approach the end of the conversation. Let's get into the Christmas album. I love Christmas so much. I actually don't enjoy the day itself, because I'm 37, I'm single, all my friends have got, you know, families. I'm every year just at home with my parents, like, oh my God, loser of the year right here. I never feel more single than at Christmas. The rest of the year, I love being a bachelor. I'm out in the world touring and adventuring and, you know, just doing what I want. But then it gets to Christmas and I'm like, man, this is lonely. So that part of it, not so much a fan, but Christmas movies, Christmas music, the whole sentiment and magic around that time of year is, for me, the stuff of life. And it reminds us the potential of forgiveness and love and generosity and compassion. I think all of these really important human themes come to the focus around Christmas time, if you choose to let them in. And so I've always had a huge affinity with Christmas music. It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas, being probably my favorite Christmas song of all time. Just like all the skits and bits in it as well. So you've done Sinatra. You've knocked that out of the park. Are you kind of pretty early on after that sort of thinking, I've lost you on the side. Oh, there we go. You're back. Are you thinking this could be next? Like, where does the Christmas idea come from? And then let's talk about, you know, delving into this world and making this record a bit.
Yeah. So the reason I got into the Frank Sinatra stuff in the first place is because I would sing Christmas songs and I was like, you know, it feels really good. This suits my voice better than rock and roll does, you know, because when I'm singing the rock and roll stuff, I'm always stretching my voice and rasping it out. And it's, to this day, I don't really love my rock singing voice. I enjoy singing this stuff more. Because it's my real voice. It's not me trying to color it to try to hit too high a note or trying to scream over something. It's just singing my pure voice. And it just always felt good. So when I did the Sinatra record, people were like, hey, you should do a Christmas record. I saw a bunch of comments, people saying that. And I was like, I would love, you know, this is the first, you know, opportunity for me to be able to do something like this. If I just flat out cold came out with a Christmas record, I think people would be like, what the hell are you doing? Mm-hmm. You know, but now that I've done the Sinatra record, I think people won't be as shocked about it. You know, I have the 17 piece brass on there, same cast of characters from the Sinatra record, but then I've added 23 stringed instruments, a whole percussion, you know, timpani and a whole room of percussion, and then a choir. And the choir was one of the coolest things I've ever gotten to do.
Were you there for the recording day with them, obviously?
Oh, yeah. I sang along with them. Wow. The first time I sang with them was 10 a.m. in the morning when your voice is not awake yet. These guys and girls are professionals. They're incredible. So at 10 a.m. in the morning, I had to sing the first Noel with the choir, professional choir. And it was pretty, it was awesome. You know, like I said, I don't get nervous when I sing, but
you know, you got to turn it on.
If I was to get nervous, it's going to be with a choir that are very particular about every little note, every little pitch, every little timing thing, it's funny when you have their music charts out there, every little doo-dah, dee-dee, da-da-da, they get every little note, every little phrase, every little vowel. They were awesome. I think some of the most epic songs, you know, with Alter Bridge, we try to, and a lot of moodier rock bands like to write these more epic kind of larger than life things, you know, and we've always, since we wrote the song Blackbird, we're always chasing down that big sound. But I don't think there's anything more epic than those big church Christmas songs, the Oh Holy Night and the First Noel. Those songs are just, with the choir, is
real magic, man. Real magic.
Absolutely. I love that stuff.
Hey, so can you tell me which Christmas songs, other than the ones out, are going to be on the album, or are we keeping that a surprise? Can we at least delve into some maybe artists featured or covered, yeah, I should say?
No, so we're doing, so the most wonderful time of the year, Jingle Bells. I did the old Sinatra version of Jingle Bells. The Christmas song, which we just released. Mm-hmm. I did a original song called Christmas Morning, and I'm shocked that nobody's written a song about Christmas morning. But I remember my dad always telling me, you need to write a Christmas song. I'm like, I can't, you know, I'm a rock guy. The rock guys don't write Christmas songs. So finally I got to write my Christmas song.
When's that one coming out?
That's going to come out on the day the record comes out, I believe. And then the First Noel, Let It Snow.
Amazing. For the diehard fans.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and
which is a Christmas movie.
Yeah, that's right. And then Oh Holy Night.
So sadly, then, no, it's beginning to look a lot like Christmas, I'm detecting.
No. That'll be the second record.
That's the sequel. Yeah.
Oh yeah. And then Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas.
Ooh.
I love those. So the record has a lot of different vibes. You have the Oh Holy Night and the First Noel, which is the big churchy choir thing. And then you have the Christmas song and Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas, which is just a bass guitar, piano, drums, real stripped down. Then you have the fun Jingle Bells, Santa Claus Is Coming to Town, Most Wonderful Time of the Year, which is just the big band kind of vibe, crooner thing. And then This Christmas, which is one of my favorite tunes, you know, that's definitely a different vibe. That's the last track on the record. I didn't know if I was going to be able to pull that one off, but I enjoy the way it turned out.
Let me ask you this, other than your partner and your children, your family, is there anything in this world that brings you more joy than singing Christmas songs? Because if there is,
so,
I want to know it.
No, I absolutely love Christmas songs. And it's funny because I finished this record. I recorded it in April. And it's been a real challenge talking about it and getting it out there and releasing songs, because nobody wants to hear Christmas until Thanksgiving time. You know, it's, everybody's like, yeah, don't play Christmas songs right now.
Let's get Halloween out of the way first, kind of thing. Yeah.
It weirds people out. So I'm sitting on this record I'm really excited about, but I can't put it out yet. So it's I'm excited.
Well, dude, I'm excited, and I'm excited for you. And just what an amazing chapter of your life and your musical journey, and to have, you know, the kind of, I don't want to say closure, because I know Creed have kind of, I guess, never really officially broken up, maybe really, you know, and I know that those wounds have kind of healed a while ago. So, but what a celebratory return to set sail with them. Obviously, Alter Bridge is always killing it and doing its thing. You know, Miles is out there doing his thing, and you're doing the Tremonti Records. I'm sure you'll be at 10 of them soon enough. And then to do all of this stuff now. And what's great is that, like, you know, rock and roll, although the likes of Ozzy and Angus Young and these legends have shown us otherwise, it's kind of a young man's game, right? Whereas the crooning stuff, you could be up on stage when you're 90 years old, knocking those tunes out. That must be cool to know that, like, eventually, maybe if you want to step away from the amps for a while, you know that there's always going to be a club where you can pick up a microphone, the orchestra can start up, and there's always going to be a crowd wanting to hear that stuff. Because it's just, as it's proven, because the music's already, you know, nearly 100 years old in some cases, the actual compositions, that music is timeless, man.
Absolutely. It's definitely my my retirement plan. Get up there and sing Sinatra for the rest of my life. I would love it. I want to do more of it. You know, I've only done, like I said, 6 or 7 shows. And after, you know, we've got a show in January, three in January, one in December. But after that, I want to book as much as I can. It just needs to get more well known out there so I can do more shows more often.
Hell yeah. Well, listen, when you're next over here, I would love to bring my friends with their daughter Lila down to a show to say hello to you.
I would love it.
I know that would mean a lot to them. And I'll get all the information for all the charities and everything linked to the show so people can read up more about them on here. And yeah, it's always lovely catching up with you, mate. And I'm so happy for you. And I'm really impressed with how well you've not just attempted this, but absolutely done it. The justice that it deserves, and given it your own, as you sort of alluded to earlier, it was required that you gave it your own stamp, and you have, and it sounds like the classic songs, but it still somehow sounds like you, even though we've not heard this side of you before. You've really knocked it out of the park, man, and you should be. Well,
thank you very much.
Very proud of yourself and very pleased with yourself. I hope you are.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate that. I hope you can catch one of the Sinatra shows.
When's that next happening over here?
Gosh, I hope it's sometime next year. I mean, we've only booked through January, so
just get the crews out of the way, and then we'll see. Then, dude, if you book them, they will come. And
yes,
I am all over it. And I'll get my best tux out for the occasion.
Awesome, I appreciate it.
Art, you're a good man, and it's been lovely catching up. Thank you for your time, and Merry Christmas to you. I'm going to say it. I don't care if it's too early.
Merry Christmas.
Take care, buddy.
You too.
Talk soon.
Have yourself a merry little Christmas. Let your heart be light. From now on, all troubles will be out of sight. Have yourself a merry little Christmas. Make the Yuletide gay.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.